new stand-up series. That's after this, a handy way to make sure you never miss any of the key moments from mornings here on Radio 4.
The Best of Today podcast.
Let's go and look inside the bakery.
Showcasing highlights from Radio 4's Today programme.
Could we talk first of all about where you think the conflict is right now?
Football was always the one for me and I fell in love with it since I was a little girl.
The Prime Minister has agreed to stand down.
Radio 4's Best of Today podcast.
And as I've turned my head, I've just seen a little egret.
What does it tell us about Russian firepower and how far it can reach?
Mother-daughter relationships are complex.
Subscribe now on BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, Annika Rice is known as the woman who can persuade anyone to do anything, thanks to shows such as Challenge Annika and Treasure Hunt. But as it turns out, Annika herself has some issues of her own to sort out too.
Everyone, how absolutely lovely to see you, and welcome to Annika Has Issues. Why are you laughing already? The clue's in the title, I have some issues. Some I've only recognised quite recently, so I'm sharing tonight. That's the case with the first issue, which is family. Now, as my family are sitting nervously. Now, most people do that BBC programme, Who Do You Think You Are?, because they want to know who their great-great-great-granny was once removed. Not me. I'd like to know who my granny was, full stop. Not once removed. In fact, the opposite of removed. I'd like a here now, a bag of bones, however she comes. I don't care, because I want to meet my granny. Growing up as a little girl, I always knew I was a little bit different from my friends in the family department, but I had a bit of a bombshell moment last year when I realised I was a tiny bit weird as well. I realised this when I was asked to portray what I felt by the word family for Grayson's Art Club. I decided to paint a kind of Bayer type frieze, so I unrolled a long, huge long roll of watercolour paper on the dining room table, and I started, as I presumed anyone would, with my earliest family memories. So I painted the two most important people in my life, and who do you think they were?
Mother and father.
Mother and father, any children. Advance? Children, nice one. No, you're all miles off, because I painted Cindy and Patch, my childhood dolls, and here they are. Now, these are very significant to me. Please don't laugh. They were the first memories of my family. When I got Cindy on my birthday, she had a perfectly pleasant dress on. Though the perm, the 60s perm, something else, isn't it? But Cindy was a busy girl, and we had stuff to do in the sandpit. We had an entire hospital to build before tea time. And luck would have it that I also had an action man. Did anyone else have an action man? Yeah. Well, do you recognise the flying suit that Cindy is wearing? I whisked the dress off Cindy. I whisked the flying suit off Action Man. And Cindy Adventure Action Girl was born. The weirdest thing, I looked her up recently. I Googled her. And she had all this merchandise. And I'm not joking. She had a yellow and blue buggy. And I had no idea about this. And for those of you a bit confused, I used to do a program called Challenge Annika. And I had a yellow and blue buggy. So basically, without knowing, I have nicked her entire identity. But anyway, back to the frieze. And after Cindy and Patch, I then painted Heidi, Katie Carr, Joe March, Piglet, Eeyore, all the other members of my family. I told you it was a bit weird. My art club frieze was going really well. It didn't occur to me that it was odd that there were no humans yet at all. Then almost 2 feet into the frieze, I painted my baby sister, who was born when I was 11. She's actually the first human. Then came my massive challenge family of volunteers and team, and they're here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. It's so good to see you all. Then there's my painting tribe. There are charity families, my own children. And 5 feet later, I'd finished this enormous frieze. It was only at that point I realised I'd only painted my parents right at the end when they were grandparents. And in fact, I say parents, but my poor mum doesn't make it onto that at all. There's only a rather dramatic bare family tree and a question mark dangling over the top of it. Grayson's got a lot to answer for because it started this momentous chain of thought. Who do I think I am? So I want to explain my weird childhood background because the plot starts with my mother, who, as a young child, was evacuated from the deprived East End of London in the war, and she arrived in the leafy home counties and thought, well, hello, this is rather nice. In bright, dappled sunshine, she played tennis like Joan Hunter Dunn and learned Latin at the local grammar school and thought, I like this a lot. I mean, I'm making all this up because I actually have no knowledge about what actually happened when she was evacuated, because my mother would never talk about her past. She was so ahead of her time, my mum. She just cancelled her entire family. This was decades before being cancelled was a thing. I mean, I'm happy to cancel my Now TV subscription until they do another series of Succession. But a whole family. My mother cancelled her whole family. So I grew up knowing nothing about my mother's family or where she came from, where I came from. I mean, you'll all be shouting at the radio now, didn't you ask? I mean, surely the person who can get anything out of anyone. Well, the thing is, I can if it's 4 state-of-the-art ovens and a giant American-style freezer for a soup kitchen. But all I can say in my defence, Your Honour, is that if you grow up with a subject that's out of bounds, you just get used to it. The nearest I got to a heart-to-heart ever with my mother was her saying to me one day while I was washing up, my mother died yesterday. I felt real shame and confusion. There didn't seem to be any emotion around this statement. She didn't seem sad. Who was her mother? Grayson Perry was pretty mystified by the secrecy and weirdness of my life.
Hello, Annika.
Oh, Grayson, hello. I can't tell you what this project has done to me. I'm in a complete emotional wreck. My parents, neither of them would ever talk about their background. I mean, I knew they had brothers and sisters from sort of things I'd heard, but I wasn't allowed to meet them. That really bothered me. That really bothered me as a sort of communicative sort of person.
Have you got any idea about what they were secretive about, your parents?
No. A few years ago, I wouldn't have even had this gone this far. This is a big step for me to actually talk about it, because I still haven't done anything about it. I've gone as far as a friend gave me one of those DNA testing kits. Right. I sent it off. It's come back. I haven't looked. I can't do it.
What did you get emotionally out of doing this painting for Art Club?
Just seeing that I had created this family. It was like a sort of thunderstruck moment, because I realised my family was just about community and people that I love. And it just became such a thing of joy in the end.
It'll be a joy for me to have it in my exhibition, Annika.
Oh, Grayson, thank you. I'm very... It is quite long, though, Grayson.
Yeah, the framing cost might be a bit prohibitive, you know.
Oh, my God, that painting. I mean, the art gallery sort of did look a bit shocked when it arrived to be hung. Anyway, in the late 90s, a real member of my family, a cousin, got in touch. Now, I have to say, if I had a penny for everyone who'd come up to me over the years and said they were related to me, I'd be phoning this in from a super yacht floating gently in Monaco. I mean, people used to come up to me wherever I was and say things like,
oh, lovely to see you again, Annika. You were at school with me in Perth, just down the road from the big Tesco Extra. Do you remember Mrs. McTavish and her clouty dumplings?
My producer asked me what a clouty dumpling was. That's the whole point. I don't know, because it wasn't me. Don't you get? I wasn't there at that school in Perth. It just wasn't me. Or even quite recently, a woman cornered me in the Marks and Sparks food hall where I was buying gin. And she reminded me how I'd been her bridesmaid when she got married in Barcelona. No! Hang on! And please stop nudging me with that cauliflower. I've only been to Barcelona once, and that was to rescue 2 chimps and bring them back to a monkey enclosure we built in Dorset. It. And the only time I've ever been vaguely near Perth was to build a seal sanctuary somewhere off the M90. anyway, there was one time this cousin got in touch. We had a look of each other and I devoured every detail she had of mysterious aunts and uncles and cousins. She had intriguing, grainy, black and white photos of my grandparents who came from Spitalfield in London. This was the first time I'd ever seen my granny. They were standing on the steps of a small terraced house. And what broke me was a photograph of my mother as a young teenager. So beautiful, a really tender picture. Who was she? I mean, did her parents love her? What was going on there? And why did this cousin have this picture and not me? It turns out my cousin was changing her name and emigrating the next day to Australia. Talk about the rug being pulled from under my feet. Here was an actual family member, and she was about to disappear. Anyone else in the audience make me feel better? Have any of you got weird families? Oh, straight up with a hand, if you don't mind me saying.
So I've never met any of my grandparents either, but I did change my name because of my grandfather. My father was a war baby, an American GI war baby. His father had gone back to America, told his wife what happened, and she had sent over a letter to his mother saying that, you know, they'll take the baby. They understood everything. And I thought that was such a story of compassion that when I found out the surname that my father should have had from that story, yes, which was Cahoon, I thought, do you know what? I'm going to take that name. I'm going to take the name Cahoon. And it was a Scottish name, so I researched all of my Scottish roots, and we spent the next 10 years or so doing as much research as we could to try and find this Steve Cahoon that my dad's aunt had told him about. And eventually, about 2 years ago, he did a DNA test, and that helped us to actually track down my grandfather. Sadly, he died in the 60s, and his surname was Urban. So I have the wrong surname. And a brilliant urban legend.
That's an amazing story. I slightly topped my story, actually. I'm sort of slightly gutted. On the subject of weird, I have a huge file at home packed with photos of babies called Annika. Their parents, in a haze of lycra and helicopters, named their daughters after me. This is all in the 80s and 90s. So they're a kind of unusual branch of my family, though I did balk at becoming their godparents when their parents asked me to. So I've asked them along tonight. Here's a baby Annika, everyone, presumably. The funny thing is, everyone will be imagining, of course, you're a baby, but you're now in your
30s. I know, 30s. I'm 34, so I'm not really a baby anymore. Yeah. But
so we call you Baby Annika, if that's
baby
all right.
Annika.
So how did that come about?
So my dad basically just fancied you. As I'm sure a lot of men did in the...
What do you mean, did?
No, do. I'm obviously Hindu, I'm Indian, and they had a running joke when I was like 2, 3, 4, and obviously your last name is Rice,
yeah,
mine isn't, but they would say, Annika, do you want some rice?
Hilarious.
So they just love the puns.
It's hilarious.
But I was basically named Annika after you because my dad absolutely loved you, and he's so gutted he couldn't be here today.
Oh, you should have brought him along.
Well, he wanted to come, but he had another engagement that he couldn't. No, he couldn't get out of it, but he sends his love.
Oh, that's and well, luckily for you, from Indian heritage, there can't be many Annikas in India, so you know.
No. My name is spelt with one N.
Oh.
So rather annoyingly,
controversial.
Lots of people say Annika rather than Annika, which is kind of my pet peeve. And then I have to remind them, I go, oh, do you know Annika Rice from the 90s? I'm named after
Baby Annika. It's actually very funny because with the news that we're bringing back Challenge Annika, of course, various other Annikas have got in touch, and this is rather like, you know how at weddings they read the messages of people who couldn't make it. Annika Sillitoe, she says, "I'm fuming that Channel 5 haven't asked me to star on the new Challenge Annika. Having lived with the bloody name for 30 years, not to get my chance to do the programme now." So that's Annika. And then another baby Annika, she said, "I've lived for 30 years with people shouting, 'Stop the clock,' and eventually it's all died down. All the references have stopped, and now you're bloody well back, aren't you?" Anyway, back to my life, because one parent being secretive about their past was one thing, and not that uncommon, actually, in the post-war era when families had been separated. But I had two of them. My dad was secretive as well. He never mentioned his parents either. So you may think, just shut up, just open an Ancestry website and sort it out, you're boring me. But I find it tricky. I feel it's not my place to disturb a recent history. Back to my mum, and I should say that she was fascinating. Not as a parent so much, but as human being, because she reinvented herself. She picked herself out of the ashes of post-war austerity and 1950s household drudgery. She was a complete force of nature. My dad was gentle and kind, though very absent through work, and worked for a concrete company. And we just sort of got on with things. And I found out age 5 onwards, I liked wearing a hard hat and poking my finger into wet concrete. But my mum was a constant surprise, which is slightly disconcerting when you're her small child. One term I turned up and she was the games teacher at my school, which was a nightmare because she refused to let me be in the netball team because it would have been favouritism. Instead, I just watched the team from behind the hedge. The next term, she'd run off to Paris to study art with mysterious new friends. She picked up Hitchhikers with Zeal. She ran off to university. She was the master of reinvention, or should that be the master of avoidance? And as a result, I had to keep shifting my perspective. I learnt to thrive on jeopardy, and that's still the only modus operandum I know. Go giddily with hope, stand on the edge of fear, and plunge forth. My teenage diaries are an insight. I documented life at home with two parents who didn't like each other, who had no option of escape, neither having the funds to support a divorce. If only they had known it was better to come from a broken home than be in one. I was the family elastoplast, plus, definitely the adult in the house. Have a listen to when I was on Radio 4's My Teenage Diary. Do you know that show? You basically turn up with your diaries and Rufus Hound has a good old route around. Here he is, baffled by my life, which of course was totally normal to me.
Well, Monday the 15th of November 1971, Juliet's second birthday. Had to miss school to help as mum ill, swept, tidied and washed up, and then Ma decided she was all right and I had to go to school after all. Latin, French, English, geography, worn out at end of day. Baked bean pie for lunch, amazing. Wednesday the 15th of December, baby crying, got up to help. Typical holidays, got up, made bed, washed up, cleared up, looked after baby, unpicked hem of my skirt, hoovered all afternoon, tidied bedroom, tidied playroom. Mum said, "Now you know what I do every day." Except it was what I was doing every day. My mum used to say to me, "Make the most of your life before you have children. Don't get to 30 and have regrets. Earn your own money. Have your own bank account. Don't be dependent on anyone. Get your own front door. Don't put all your eggs in one basket." Oh, that was... That was actually Dorothy Parker's quote. But you see where I'm going? You can see why I became a multitasker from about the age of 8. I mean, that's one hell of a list to get through. I had all that to think of, as well as doing double chemistry, picking up my sister from nursery and doing all the other jobs in that list. Well, the weirdness of my childhood meant that I dug in and found my own emotional landscape. I created my own family. I just got on with it. And I found a whole new family when I left school and joined the BBC. I was posted to the BBC World Service as part of a training scheme and discovered there was a massive world out there I could get lost in. So after my 2-year course, I handed in my notice and booked a one-way ticket to Hong Kong to the utter incredulity of the BBC personnel department.
"Are you mad? You've only been with us 2 years. Do you realise there are thousands of people who would cut off their arm for your job?"
Yep, sorry, save their arms. I haven't time to be here anymore. I've got numbers 1, 2, and 3 to get through on my mother's list. I channeled Cindy in her red flying suit. I thought, be more Cindy, and I set off. I was 20 by now, and I got a job as a news sub-editor at TVB, which was the TV station. It was a weird time. I didn't know a soul, and no one in the UK knew where I was. To be honest, it was quite exhausting on the emotional front. I was pretending to be 25 and an experienced BBC journalist. My big break, though, came when the newsreader was ill and I offered to take his place. I mean, how difficult could it be? We've all watched the news on telly. Anyway, I was so nervous, I ran someone over on the way to the studio. And then, to make matters worse, Spike Milligan was recording an interview in the studio next door, and he actually crawled in and sat at my feet under my desk during the entire broadcast. Hong Kong's a bit like that. It's a bit surprising. I'd often wander into the Bottoms Up Club in Wan Chai after work, a bit lonely, and sit at the bar with the topless girls there and chat to them. They were always Scottish for some reason. And I just wanted to offer them some solidarity, and I discovered sisterhood in Hong Kong. It must have looked odd, me, a rather serious 20-year-old, fully clothed newsreader, and them. But the owner of the bar mothered me. I found the whole scene seductive. A family with the topless community. I took family literally wherever I could find it. At the time, the Children of God cult were big in Hong Kong. The women operated from the bar at the Hilton Hotel. They picked up men. It was called flirty fishing. It was all about free sex in return for free sex. Anyway, can I just actually say, I wasn't part of this cult. As I'm saying that, I'm thinking people are actually going quite pale and, yeah. I got to know some of these women, though, because I was just ridiculously drawn to the unusual. And out of the blue came an invitation to go to Macau to meet the whole Children of God cult at their headquarters. Anyway, I packed my bag for the weekend and set off by boat to this island off the south coast of China. I might have been kidnapped. I didn't care. No one would even know I'd gone missing apart from the news team at TVB, who might wonder why I wasn't sitting in my chair about to read the news on Monday, or the police force who were still waiting to interview me about that accident I didn't have time to tell you about before. Anyway, I got there, and small blonde children sang angelically in a row to me, just like the Von Trapp family singers. The leader showed me round. I played with the children. I peeled potatoes with some of his wives. I might have grated a few carrots. There was no attempt to brainwash me, talk about sex being presented as something utterly wholesome. I just filed it under weird, put it in my memoir file, which was groaning by now, just went back to work. Those Hong Kong years were utterly insane now I look back at them, but really defining for me because I worked all hours. I loved the fear, the chaos of the city. In my time off, I worked in a refugee camp as it was the time of all the boat people arriving in Hong Kong from Saigon, and I saw families destroyed and fractured and dug in with them. I found I could slip in anywhere with any community. These years prepared me for the UK and an unusual job flying around in helicopters without doors, being chased by a panting cameraman. But that lovely crew, we were such a family. We all pulled together. It was my job to buy the Durex. Now, the Durex, we needed a lot of them because they were for my radio mic. Because... Why, what did you think? At any moment, I could jump off a cliff into the sea, so we had to wrap it in layers and layers of condoms. And so I used to go to the local chemist, whichever town we were in, and I was very well known at that time, and I'd say to the girl behind the chemist counter, could I have 28 packets of Durex, please? And the young girl at the counter would blush scarlet every time. And I'd say, oh, sorry, I should explain. They're not for me, they're for the film crew. Anyway, something then happened in the 80s that really changed my life. I went to see a theatre performance by Chicken Shed, which is an inclusive theatre company. And on the stage were children in wheelchairs, deaf, blind children, children with Down syndrome. And alongside them were adults to help and other children who could wheel and interpret and point and move. It was a community, a family pulling together. And that was it. I saw a family on that stage. And that was the trigger point for the rest of my life. I ran home and devised the format for Challenge Annika. Anyway,
Shortly after this revelation, I had my own baby to add to this melting pot. Oh, my God, I'm being quite random here, but it's a miracle I ever got pregnant. I can actually see my son in the audience, so we're not making eye contact at this moment. It's OK. Teenage diary time again, because I want to tell you about the day we did sex ed at school. Now, our teacher, Mrs. Tennant, our biology teacher, was an enormous lady who wore very tiny short dresses and freaked us all out, to be honest, especially when we did reproduction. I've still got all my biology files. They're decorated with very jolly penises I drew. One was called Kevin. He had eyebrows. But anyway, we got to the lesson. We got to the lesson about human sex, and this is from my diary, 8th of October, 1973. In biology, talked about contraception, and Fee asked what sex was like. Mrs. Tennant said, "It's a very pleasant experience." We all went silent and pale with disgust. I will never be able to get the picture out of my head. We didn't even laugh. Vol-au-vents for supper. Had a strange dream about Jerry. Anyway, it's a miracle I moved on from that, but I managed to put all that behind me and was about to give birth to my first son. But even that was traumatic because a son photographer tried to break into my room dressed as a doctor to take a photo of me breastfeeding. But he couldn't find me as I was busy having a blood transfusion in some operating theatre somewhere. When I came round again, my baby was nowhere to be seen. Where would a baby be in a posh hospital? So I ordered room service. I had no idea. I was just, there were no nurses, no one was around. Hello, yes, could I have the scrambled eggs, please? And could you bring up my baby, please? Anyway, Thomas arrived as a side order with the coffee. Anyway, I looked into his eyes and just felt home. My heart melted. I was going to protect him and my future children with every fiber in my body. I realized I felt untethered until my own children were born. I never really belonged to anyone until I belonged to them, my most precious possessions. So that wretched freeze, I mean, the Grayson Perry one, it's a reminder that life is big and complicated. We're all emotional shapeshifters who can become whatever is needed of us. So please don't panic if you are that square peg in a round hole, because most of us are. We just learn to adapt, don't we? I mean, being different is what makes us unique. The biggest thing I've learnt doing this is I miss my mum, or I miss the idea of my mum. I really wish she was in that freeze because she made me, not just physically, but metaphysically. I've actually no idea what that means. No, I don't. But more importantly, she was an amazing granny to my sons, which was hugely significant to me, having had such a yearning for a granny myself. As soon as that freeze is back from the Bristol Art Gallery, I'm going to unframe it and add her, possibly with a suffragette flag. And honestly, I really miss the idea of her and wish I could have got to know her properly. It's so difficult to break through a wall of silence. So folks, talk to your family, get to know them, even if they're a little bit weird. In the next programme, I'm going to be exploring another one of my issues, which is therapy. So bring your security blanket, maybe a comforter, soft toy, and we'll wade in. See you then. Annika Has Issues was devised, written and performed by me, Annika Rice, and produced by Alison Vernon-Smith. It was a BBC Studios production for Radio 4.
And as we were just hearing, Annika's next topic will be therapy when she returns at the same time next week. Front Row is coming up in 15 minutes. This evening we'll be hearing from the director, Olivia Newman, on taking the best-selling